How have you not seen this?
Seen this. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I'm joined by my guest host, Taylor Reinhart.
Hi, it is not what you, it's not what you are underneath what you do that defines you.
Exactly. And we're joined by our guest, Erica Van Hyde.
Hi, I'm Erica, and I do a lot of things that define me really
well. And we're actually working through the Dark Knight trilogy, Christopher Nolan's the most recent Batman run, and we just watched Batman Begins. Movie kind of rebooted the franchise, brought more or less pretty credible film back to the character, did some bank box office over the course of the trilogy, and was like 90% really fucking good. So Erica, how have you not seen this?
I don't know. What year did this come out?
2005.
Okay, well, I was 10 when this came out.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. I'm sorry. So that's probably part of it. Honestly, I think The Dark Knight is the only Batman movie I've seen. And so if that answers the question at all, I don't know. I was young, and I'm not, you know, that into superhero movies, really.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
That makes sense. Okay, so now that you have seen, and we'll talk about Dark Knight, obviously, when we get to Dark Knight. But, so knowing that, what do you think of Batman Begins now that we've sat through it together?
Okay. Well, as someone who's not very experienced, like, I'm not, like, a superhero movie person.
Uh-huh.
But I've always said, like, if, you know, the question, who's your favorite superhero, my default was always Batman.
Yeah.
Because, like, of my limited knowledge, he's the coolest because he's not, like, granted superpowers. Yeah. He's, like, this badass vigilante.
He's so brooding and dark.
But, God, this movie, like, seeing his origin story, I'm not that psyched on it.
Yeah?
He's kind of like a whiny rich kid. And
fair,
I'm not
fair
really
criticism.
Into it. I think that Rachel / Batman's dad are the superheroes. Whereas, like, Batman's this, like, pissy little punk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not. But, I mean, that's a little bit of exaggeration. Like, I think that's just because half of the movie was origin story and
yeah.
Not necessarily like him as Batman that I have that like bad taste
yeah
in.
Well, and origin stories are always tricky to pull off. Like, I still think to date the best origin story movie that's been done superhero wise is the first Iron Man. Like, and
yeah.
I think most people agree with that too, cause yeah, like origin stories, like it's the reason I don't like the first Spider-Man as much as the second one. It's like, everybody knows he got bit by a spider. His uncle got killed because he wouldn't stop a criminal. Like, we get that. We don't need 45 minutes of a movie devoted to that. And I love when movies either make it interesting or they just skip it all together. Like, The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton. Just, it's like, hey, this guy got blasted by gamma rays. You learn all of that in the first 2 minutes and that he is on the run from the government in South America. And then it just jumps into Bruce Banner hiding out in Brazil or wherever. It's like, cool, awesome, I'm getting into an actual story instead of the background that everyone knows, even if they don't read the comics.
Mm-hmm.
They took a lot of liberties with the origin.
Yeah, they did.
Especially the stuff with Bruce wanting revenge on Joe Chill, and like taking the gun to the trial. Like, there's some missteps made. I like the Nolan trilogy on the whole. I have a few gripes with it, but like, not enough that it ruins the trilogy for me. But one of them is definitely, like, Batman doesn't kill. Batman doesn't use guns. He fucking hates them because they killed his parents.
Right, and that's, so one of the things this movie does is it tries to, it really plays up the idea that he's afraid of bats, and that's the reason why this is all sort of done.
Yeah.
When in reality, I think Batman's real phobia is guns, and, like, I think that's what he has to work to be okay with over the course of his career. So, like, that was a huge annoyance, and the more I watch it this time, the more I was like, and I completely agree with you. I think Batman has no ideals in the Nolan trilogies whatsoever.
Yeah.
Everyone else exerts those idealistic influences over him.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and jump to it. We'll talk about the rest of the movie before, but let's jump into How many people fucking die as a result of Batman's, either directly as a result of Batman's action or his inaction?
Yes.
Like, he blows up the Ninja Sky Castle in the beginning, and, like, he's like, oh, I'm not going to kill this girl. I know, Taylor, you mentioned it. The guy that he refused to execute definitely fucking died in that explosion. He saves Liam Neeson. He saves Deckard, who's also actually Ra's al Ghul. Like, he rescues one person out of the easily 50 that were in there. Right. Probably at least 10 of who were, like...
decent people.
Yeah. That were, like, imprisoned. Like, granted, that guy was a murderer, but, like, still. Like, there's even that point early where Bruce Wayne says, like, I learned about, like, the crime not being so black and white when, like, it's caused out of desperation and all that. It's like, that guy's family was starving. Like, maybe it was an accidental murder. Like, it doesn't make it okay, but, like, so... so there's that. There's when he grapples onto the subway car and goes flying, and then like 8 innocent people fall 40 feet in the air. I was like, those people are either dead or fucking paralyzed for life.
Right.
And then the best, of course, is Deckard at the very end. It's like, I won't kill you, but I don't have to save your life. No, that you're letting him die. You're killing him.
That's what I was like, if you slit his throat, like, you wouldn't kill him. The blood loss would kill him.
Yeah.
At what point are you not killing him?
Well, and then letting the train crash through was like...
yes!
Like, how did you know no one was going to get killed? How could you predict that, like, there weren't teenagers making out in the back of a car in that parking garage?
And not to mention that one thing that I was, like, really annoyed at the whole movie is that, like... the root of crime in Gotham or in Indy City isn't, like, the one drug lord. It's, like, the mass poverty.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
like, you're just fucking destroying the whole fucking city. Like, who is paying for this?
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, driving his, like, goddamn Batmobile all over, like, the rooftops. I'm like, do you think those business owners have, like, vigilante insurance? Like, who the fuck is going to pay for that? You're just, like, making the economic situation of the city worse. Well, so,
yeah, Rachel mentions that. She says... well, I'll tell you exactly what's happening in this city. The bad guys are rich, and the good guys are too scared to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not how... like, who are the bad guys and who are the good guys? She says, basically, bad guys organized crime, good guys her. And Gordon. But, like, there's so many people that are corrupt in any city, and, like, their bureaucracy is so corrupt. Deckard's like, we just infiltrated everything.
Yeah, it was like, super every level easy. Of the infrastructure.
And so that line from Rachel and this idea that Falcone is what's destroying Gotham, just so ridiculous.
Well, like, there's that great moment when Bruce Wayne confronts Falcone for the first time after Rachel kicks him out and he throws his gun in the river. Like, he goes in and is like, there's a union official, a couple off-duty cops, like, a judge. Like, that's the power of fear. And that's a great fucking line. Yeah. Like the big theme throughout this entire movie is fear.
Yeah.
Like, and I think each installment of the trilogy has that.
I was thinking of the line from Game of Thrones, actually, when Cersei says to Ned Stark, she's like, I think he says something about... how he's like, wisdom is power or something, and she's like, no, power is power. Like, that's what he had, is he just had, like, power. Like, there's nothing that Bruce Wayne's money could
have absolutely.
Done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even said, like, he pulls a gun out on him, like anywhere else. Like, if there were cops, like, the first thing they should do is, like, draw on that guy, like, and tell him to stand down. They're just like, oh, he's pointing a gun at the rich dude.
Yeah.
Like, they don't give a shit. And the judge is just, like, sitting there with a working girl, I imagine. Like, just looking at him, like, Oh, Falcone gonna kill that Wayne orphan.
The judge, I love Judge Faden's, his name is Judge Faden, which I don't know why I know it, but I do. He looks up with, like, the faintest sign of guilt, like, ugh.
Yeah, well, like, he kind of
whoops. Feels
bad about it. He's like, maybe I shouldn't have taken that pity off.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
C'est la vie.
Yeah.
Let's it sounds like we're really hating on this movie, and I do like this movie. Let's talk about some of the things the movie did right, and I'll talk about some more of the things the movie did wrong.
Right.
Cillian Murphy is fucking Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
He's great.
He knocks it out of the park. One of my absolute favorite scenes in this movie is the fight in the basement in Arkham. Mm-hmm. And, like, the lights go out, and one of the heads is like, oh, what is that? And he just, like, does, like, that classic, like, villain face, like, it's the Batman. I was like, oh, God. Like, when I saw it in the theater, it was like, oh, geez. Like, in, like, 2 seconds, he nailed what Batman villains are.
Yeah.
Like, better than any of the other movies, like, in the rest of the trilogy. Like, and he's the character, like, with the exception of Zaz in this movie, He's the character with the least amount of screen time, and he's in all three movies. Spoiler. Well, you know one of them, yeah. So. But, like, yeah, like, he so perfectly encapsulates that in such little time. And it's kind of a bummer. And Ra's al Ghul doesn't get that much time either. Mm. Like, he only has a little bit more than Scarecrow does. And that's entirely because of the training stuff at the beginning. Because, like, after that reveal, it's like, oh, Liam Neeson's in this movie for 5 minutes if you don't count the stuff at the beginning where we don't realize he's the bad guy.
Right. Well, and yeah, and I mean, I think, I don't know, it's just really goofy how... Oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought. How much do we edit this? Because I just completely lost my train of thought.
That's all right. We'll jump on to something when it comes back to you.
Okay.
Let's talk about, because I didn't realize again until... It's been probably 2 or 3 years since I've watched this, but I've seen it easily like 10 times. I forgot how corny some of the lines were.
That's actually what it was. What I was going to say is we needed more time for cornball lines. I know you guys were taking
notes. Let's just run through some of our favorites.
Well, I already said it's not who you are underneath. Yeah. What you do, man. Defines you.
That reminds me of a point I want to get to after we get through this.
Absolutely. My phone just did something weird. Mess it up. Okay. No, we're fine. Always, you never remember to mind your surroundings.
Yep.
Why do we fall to pick ourselves back up?
Yep, of course.
More than just a man, and the whole just symbol incorruptible.
Yeah, yep.
That whole goofiness. Brick by brick was a very fun one. Haven't given up on me.
Never.
Yep. Nice coat is a very fun one to call back.
The throwaway line by Rade Cerveja from Snatch.
Yep. It's a bit technical for Bruce talking about stock things. And then, of course, didn't you get the memo?
Yeah, from Lucius it's like Rocks. every single bad line has a callback.
Yeah,
which is so unnecessary.
Do you remember this annoying thing that we said earlier in the movie?
Yeah, we're gonna say it again. It's not who I am underneath line. I really hate the trend in superhero movies where they arbitrarily reveal their secret identity.
Yes.
Like, that's the only thing I hate about Spider-Man 2 is like, oh, he saved these people. Oh, half of New York knows who Spider-Man is. Like, they don't know him, but they're going to see him, like, walk by on the street, and they're going to do a double take, and they're like, oh, that dude's Spider-Man.
That's fucking Spider-Man.
Yeah. So Rachel Dawes knows he's Batman. The kid that King Joffrey plays can probably put 2 and 2 together because she says very audibly, Bruce.
Yeah, so that's my dad. Funny you bring that up. My dad, who's like written a book on Batman, he's convinced that the initial plan, either from the studio or from Nolan, was that that kid would eventually show up as a Robin type character, though.
Yeah, that would have been really cool.
What George and Joseph Gordon-Levitt eventually would play.
Yeah.
So they might have been gunning for that, so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, like some really cool wraparound, but like otherwise it's just stupid.
But yeah, because like there's definitely like over the course of the trilogy, and of course we'll talk about it more once we get through the entire trilogy for the final installment, but like there's definitely a lot of carryover like and recurring themes and ideas throughout the trilogy, some of them executed better than others, obviously. But it's so weird. And then the lady at the party has to know something's up. Because she says, now let me introduce you to this guy. Am I pronouncing it right? Ra's al Ghul. Bruce Wayne's response in front of this woman and within earshot of anyone else who cares to listen, which could be a lot of people in the 100-plus people at his birthday party, says very clearly, you can't be Ra's al Ghul. I watched him die.
My favorite part about that shot was that the woman, the actress's face was still like a quarter of it was still on screen, and she just does not react. Yeah. She's just like, yep.
which means one of two things. I would like to think it's this first thing, in that she is an agent of the League of Shadows, or she is like one of their people in Gotham, like Crane, who they're manipulating to their own purpose. But realistically, it's probably they didn't think, oh, maybe Bruce Wayne shouldn't tip his hat in front of people and say things like, I saw a man die. Like,
well,
hey,
he was gone for 7 years. Who knows what happened?
Well, like, the only time it's acceptable for Bruce Wayne to say, I watched him die in front of somebody, is if he's talking about his dad. Because that's true in public knowledge.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that Bruce Wayne went to the mountains and trained to be a ninja, and then blew up a castle and killed a bunch of ninjas.
Which, while we're talking about trained to be a ninja,
yes,
can you talk about that fucking training? Because, like, at what point in the 21st century, like, is sword training as, like, the principal form of your training? Like, at what point is that practical?
Yeah.
I will say this. I definitely understand the point you're making. I let that slide because the idea of Batman is he masters all forms of combat, including unarmed and any kind of weaponry.
But we mostly just see sword training in terms
but
of
yeah,
training.
But yeah, it's entirely
just a lot of sword training. Yeah.
It is a lot of sword training. You are absolutely right. And it's crazy because Batman never carries a sword.
Yeah.
Like, some of the stuff, like the smoke and stuff, like the making himself invisible, like all that, like, yeah, that applies. He does those things. Mm. But yeah, you never see him use a sword once after that.
And
like,
I guess,
section.
Like, what I was kind of, like, rationalizing it because I was like, well, like, he's very, like, he's teaching him to, like, be more agile and to, like, not pay attention to his surroundings, which kept coming out.
Yeah.
But, like, fuck, put down the fucking sword. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we?
It's like 80% sword fights, 10% blending into the shadows, 10% dancing around on those poles of varying heights while he's blocking fucking Boku sticks getting swung at him.
Because Asia.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was a problem. Oh, and also, Dustin, I heard you mention Bruce talking about watching his dad die. You forgot to mention his mom. Funny enough, Christopher Nolan forgot to mention Bruce's mom as well pretty much the entire movie.
Yeah!
She's neglected. There is more dialogue dedicated to his dad buying his mom jewelry
than his
mom has a line. She just says, "What's wrong, Bruce?" Only line of the film.
Yep.
There are
yep.
two, other than woman at the party who has one line, there are two female roles in this entire movie.
Yeah,
there's Rachel and the secretary who Bruce Wayne teaches how to putt.
Yep.
no reason.
Yeah. Oh, and the supermodels.
Oh, yeah.
We have more hotel speed to buy.
They go swimming in the hotel fountain.
Yeah.
So, fun
about it. While we're talking about the hotel scene where he buys the hotel, one of the things that does carry over really well and that they really do, one of the most like painful things of reading Batman comics is knowing that Bruce Wayne has to just be a douchebag in the public eye, despite the fact that he's really this great noble person who's doing this great thing and fighting to save his city, but then he has to act like a total asshole to throw suspicion off his trail. And it's the worst when he sees Rachel. He's like, oh, I'm leaving this hotel with supermodels, this hotel that I just bought. She's like, oh, I remember when you used to be a good person. He's just kind of forced to walk away and be like, oh, cool, the woman I love thinks I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Well, I better go Batman for a while.
Well, and Bale does a great job of, like, keeping the smile on through that entire, shot. Really uncomfortably, he's still doing his, like, fake smile.
Yeah, he keeps it up. Like, he's definitely, out of all the actors that have played Batman, he's the best one that has had both sides of the persona down.
Because,
I think Keaton was a great Batman, okay Bruce Wayne. Clooney, great Bruce Wayne, terrible fucking Batman. Val Kilmer was in a Batman movie.
Well, and Bale also, another important thing is that a lot of these actors physically, I mean, Michael Keaton is the tiniest man in the world.
Well,
he should have been Batman.
Well, Keaton was a fucking comedic actor, too. Like,
yeah.
I think he literally only got the role because Tim Burton did it, and he had just come off Beetlejuice, which he's fucking amazing in. But it's like, oh, you're putting a comedic actor in the role of this physically demanding superhero.
Yeah.
I guess if you pad the suit enough, we won't be any the wiser, I guess.
Well, they had to keep having Kim Basinger in that movie lose her shoes so that she wasn't
taller than him. Definitely.
Yeah. So Christian Bale, he gets down, he does some push-ups. Mm-hmm. He's a big man. He's a physically imposing Batman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'd be scared to be Christian Bale.
Yeah, like he, and I think he packed on like 30 to 40 pounds of muscle for every time they did one of these, like, which is crazy, because he did The Machinist, where he lost a shitload of weight. So, like, he was just emaciated. Like, you could see his ribs, and it's a really great movie. Off-putting anytime he's not wearing a shirt, which is more than you would think it should be in that movie. But, yeah, he fucking commits to roles. Like, even when he's in a dog shit movie like Terminator Salvation, he commits, and that's why I like him as much as I do. Like, he's a great actor.
Is Christian Bale's Batman voice, am I going to get used to it, or is it going to be this distracting the entire trilogy? Because it is ridiculous.
You problematically, think ridiculous? I think it's best in this movie.
Yeah,
it's only going to get worse.
While we were watching this, the whole time I was seeing it, I was like, the voice isn't as ridiculous as I remember in this.
Yeah.
Like, I will say that it's kind of like a 50-50 split on me, because none of the other Batmans really, like, change their voice when they're in Batman mode. And, obviously you can't hear it in the comics, but, like when they're, like, narration from, like, other characters, like, they mention, like, noticing that his voice is gravelly, like, it sounds like he's doing a voice and not the way he really talks. None of the other Batman movies do it, and this one definitely does it. It does go a little over the top with it, but at the same time, I think if the first thing we saw was Batman and we went into this having no knowledge, we wouldn't know that was a character Christian Bale was playing.
Are you sure? You don't think that we would have known that was not his voice? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying we would have known it wasn't his voice. Oh. We would not have been able to say, this is a character that Christian Bale is playing. Okay. Because we wouldn't have been able to identify it with his regular voice,
which is
the Bruce Wayne voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, no, we definitely would have been like, oh, he's doing a Clint Eastwood impression or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, like, his tongue has been stung by bees.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I look a cop?
Well, yeah, I think, like, so Christian Bale doesn't have the benefit. Firstly, everything has to be exaggerated in these superhero blockbusters.
Of course.
Everything has to be dumbed down to the common denominator and, like, so that's rough. Like, you have to make these big things. But, like, one of the cool things in, like, Batman the Animated Series, for instance, there's this one moment where Batman's in the Batman suit, and then he has to communicate via phone as Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
It's so ridiculous to hear him use the Bruce Wayne voice. So, like, really cool, like, there are voice actors who have gotten this really well. Like, you can do Gravely, and you can do Bruce Wayne, and they're almost, like, you can't even really distinguish
them.
And Bale doesn't have that talent.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of one of the other scenes that I wanted to talk about. This is also the first Batman movie to treat Alfred and Commissioner Gordon as not just, like, background characters.
Can we talk about how Alfred hasn't aged a day in, like, 20 years? Like, I would be afraid of vampires, or of bats, too, because he is very clearly a vampire.
Yes.
He, like, hasn't aged since Bruce Wayne was 10.
Michael, I don't think Michael Caine has aged in 20 years, though.
Okay.
So I think it's
to be fair.
Like, yeah. He only looks a little bit different now than he did when he was in Jaws 4.
But he had the same haircut.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely true. Whereas, like, they made it so Christian Bale didn't have the same throughout.
Right.
Like, he goes through, like, four different, like, facial hair haircut combos.
Yeah.
Although they also, like, they had to cheat Christian Bale being like 20 at one point too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. They did that with bangs.
Yeah.
Very
yep.
impressively, yep. They did it with bangs.
Bangs and just like a pronounced overbite. And then I was like, I'm gonna learn ninja skills and then I'm gonna be regular.
Well, no. So I think you have a good point about the way they treat Alfred and Commissioner Gordon, and they get great actors to do it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons I hate how little Batman seems to know and how like little few ideals he has is the fact that like there are all these really good characters, but we end up just getting like seven father figures over the course of the trilogy.
Yep.
And no, especially this movie, you've got Ducard, you've got Alfred, you've got Lucius Fox, you got his real father. And you got Commissioner Gordon. That's five father figures in one movie, which just becomes completely and utterly absurd. And if his mother was there to at least give some balance, Rachel's sort of a mentor, but not really. And he just was better.
Like, also, I want to mention that, like, okay, so yeah, your parents died when you were, like, 10, right? Or
yeah,
you
didn't
say he was, like,
somewhere.
10.
Yeah, he was in that, right? And definitely, like, before he was a teenager.
He was raised, like, around Alfred, around Rachel, who's, like, a really fucking solid person.
Yeah.
Like, he was raised around, like, these solid people in this environment where he should have, like, some kind of, like, you know, like, drive to do something, right?
Yeah,
and, like,
kind of
until he runs away, like, he's just, like, a shitty little pissant. Like,
yeah.
He, like, dropped out of college and, like, just
yeah.
wants to kill this guy who killed his parents 10 years ago, and, like...
And that's the thing, too. Like, that's another thing. Like, I hate to, like, I always hate when people are like, oh, well, in the comics it's like this, but, like, in the comics, he genuinely, he starts traveling the world at, like, 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Like, he takes, like, classes abroad. Like, he starts out, like you know, taking, like, criminology, forensic courses at, like, universities all over the world. And then he starts, like, doing martial arts training, like, as he gets a little bit older, like, and just learning all this stuff. So, like, he spends 12 years of his life training.
Yeah, he makes a vow on his parents' grave as, like, an 8-year-old. Like, he really, it's all about this. And really, when it comes down to it, I think Batman's at his best where... He had to watch his parents die. He doesn't want anyone to die, period.
Exactly.
And one of the problems with this trilogy is that sometimes he doesn't care about people dying, sometimes he does. The Batman
he doesn't give
comics.
A shit about cops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he just fucking run those cop cars over.
Yeah. In the comics, he just doesn't want to see anyone die.
Yeah.
He says that at some point. It's just, it's a really cool thing. And this movie, at times, really gets it with him, like, no, you gotta let these people go, and you gotta do this. And I think other superhero movies have done a better job of making their heroes more selfless than this one did.
Definitely.
But Batman's pretty... It's selfish, but also selfless, and I think that's what makes Batman
the coolest. Absolutely. Well, have you seen the most recent Superman Man of Steel?
No.
Are you going to give a shit if I say something about it?
Oh, no, please go ahead.
All right. If you haven't seen Man of Steel, you're not going to at this point, listeners. I like that you bring that up because there's that point... You've seen Man of Steel. Right?
Yes.
Of
yes.
So there's the point in Man of Steel where Superman has the choice of either letting Zod kill an innocent family in front of him or killing Zod to stop it. And he kills Zod. Like, and he, like, the entire time, like, he spends, like, just this time, like, it's like you... see, like, his face change over, like, when he finally realizes he has to make a choice. And he kills him. And it got a lot of flack. And people were like, oh, Superman wouldn't do that. I was like, first off, there's precedent in the comics for that. Like, it has happened. Like, Superman, obviously, like, it's like Batman in the comics. He doesn't kill. But if it comes down to him having to choose between letting somebody die as a result of his inaction or killing someone, he'll kill someone. And it was never posed that way in this movie, and it's frustrating that, like, a not very good Superman movie got that better than a good Batman movie, and that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
One thing, have you guys heard of, like, I think it's called, I wrote it down, I googled it, it's called the trolley problem in philosophy. Have you guys heard of this?
I have not, please enlighten me.
This is, like, what I feel like the movie kind of boils down, well... For me, like, my problem with Batman in this movie boils down to... The trolley problem is, like... So you're standing at like, a train track, but, like, a distance away. And there's, like, there's a break in the tracks, and so it could go one of two ways. And you're standing by the switch. And on one track, there's, like, a bunch of kids playing. And on the other track, there... Oh, am I saying this wrong? And on the other track, there's, like, just this guy, one adult man.
Okay.
And so you see the train coming, and you can either... It's going to hit the kids, and you can either let it hit them or divert it and let it hit the guy.
Yeah.
And so most people say that they'll let it hit the guy.
Yeah.
And then the second problem is that you're standing on a bridge over the tracks, and behind you is the kids playing, and there's this guy on the bridge that... If you pushed him over, they say a really fat guy, you push him over and he's enough to stop the train from hitting the kids.
Yeah.
And so in both situations, you can kill one man
to save
a bunch of kids. But most people, they say that they would flip the switch and kill the guy, but they would not physically push the guy over the bridge.
Yeah, because it feels like less of an action on their part.
Right. But, like, morally, that's the same thing. You're
still killing
someone. And I feel like Batman... wouldn't push a guy over a bridge, but he would.
But he'll let a subway car, he'll let a literal trolley crash into him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that sums it up perfectly. And it's frustrating because, like, Batman is so ingrained. It's like that law of robotics thing where, like, they can't harm humans or, by result of their inaction, allow a human to be harmed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, there's so much that I like about this trilogy and the fact that they missed, like, that one crucial component of Batman is so frustrating to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and in the next movie, and in all the movies to come, and in this movie a little bit, there is that one or the other moral dilemma that Nolan really likes. These movies are very black and white.
Yeah.
And, like, Batman isn't. And I think one of the big issues with superhero movies is that they've become such a blockbuster thing, and, like, these characters are meant to be episodic in their creation.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 30-page comic book, and then you could... And if we had Batman like that, you know, just to watch him chase down Zsasz or something, that's more thrilling to me than these big, like, on this hand. And, I mean, Spider-Man 1 is the one I always think of. Like, Green Goblin's like, either save Mary Jane or we're dropping a trolley full of people.
Yeah.
And literally. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's just an obnoxious thing about superhero movies in general. Nolan's going to fall into it more next movie, but...
Yeah.
This movie's still bad.
Well, that's why, like, to this day, I maintain the best adaptation of Batman is the animated series.
Absolutely.
Because it has, like, that, it has an episodic feel to it, like, they nail all the components of the character, like, it's well written, it's very good. Like, I love Christian Bale's Batman, I like Ledger's the Joker, like, I like the casting across the board in this entire trilogy, but, like, the animated series just, like, nothing gets the character better than that does.
Yeah, they totally nail it. Look at that.
Oh, we can keep going.
Okay.
I said it's to give me an idea.
Yeah, we can go through it a bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some other points that I wanted to hit.
Well, we should talk about things we like. Erica, what did you like?
Oh, God. I love Rachel. I have a big old crush on her. She's cute.
This is the first time I've ever heard this.
Really?
But I've mostly talked to fanboys.
Yeah,
so.
A lot of people hate the character of Rachel, and I don't understand it. I
hate the character of Rachel, too, but right. I want to hear it defended first.
So, I love Rachel. I do have one big problem with Rachel in the end of the movie. But, in general, I just think that she, I have, like, a hard-on for people that, she's, like, actually doing something that, to me, makes a difference where, I mean, other than the existence of supervillains, like, Bruce Wayne as Batman isn't gonna save a city that's, like, failing and falling to crime because of, like, economic depression. Like, Bruce Wayne's not gonna do shit. But, like, people like Rachel and Gordon, like, those are the people that, like, actually, like, dedicate their lives to, like, fixing the problem where it is. And, like, going and, like, you know, working on, like, the infrastructure of the city and, like, going through the legal system and prosecuting criminals. Like, those are the people that, like, you know, that's the kind of person that fixes a city that's failing.
Yeah.
And she's just, like, I love that she's just, like, not fucking scared of anyone.
Yeah.
You know, she, like, doesn't let people intimidate her. And she, you know, she's, like, basically the only attorney, the only one in the DA's office or in the entire city that's, like, not at all corrupt.
Yeah, like, even her boss who's not corrupt, like... There's points where he's like, you need to back off. This is like, no, like, this is our job.
Yeah,
like, this is what we're supposed to do.
And I love that. I think she's great. She's one of my favorite, like, because she's not a damsel in distress. She's
no,
like,
absolutely not.
She's like, fuck you, Bruce Ray. Like, she, like, you know.
Yeah, like, even when she's endangered, like, she pulls a gun off of an unconscious cop.
Yeah.
And, like, is ready to defend herself by lethal force if necessary. Like, but then Batman just happens to come in. I was like, I think she could have shot those three guys.
Oh, yeah. She,
like,
she had.
I think she would have been okay.
Yep. Counterpoint.
Yes.
I think that my feeling when it was announced that Katie Holmes, A, like, it has to go in historical context because Katie Holmes was, like, all over the news. When she was cast, it was the height of Tom Cruise insanity. So it felt stunty at the time. But so rewatching it with, like, and trying to get rid of all of that prior context, I think that Rachel exists to, like, spoon feed us these moral platitudes that are really unnecessary. And I think that a character like that we see in Harvey Dent. In the next movie gets done really well and does the, like, and they start really exploring, like, exactly the conflict that you're doing, but without, like, bogging it down with, you know, these just long, passionate speeches and this love interest that really detracts from the, like, super cool...
The overall
thing. Yeah, like, if she was... There have been so many great female characters in the Batman universe, that, you know, work really tirelessly, and, like, a male character could always be turned into a female character, and so, like, I'm not, you know, talking about from this side of, like, Bruce Wayne can't have a love interest with any feelings or
just hates women.
I don't hate women is what I'm trying to say, but I do think that the Rachel character allowed them to not, like, it was the laziest, easiest way to start, you know, adding in supposed, like, moral conflict. But I don't think it was there. I don't think it was there in this movie. This movie's
I understand that. That makes sense.
I think those are both solid points. One of the things that I hate, like, because you mentioned that, like, other than being Batman and fighting villains, like, Bruce Wayne, he utilizes his wealth. Like, he sets up charities, like, he, like, donates to, like, the police department. Like, he does as much as he can as a philanthropist to help the city. And then at night, he jumps on rooftops and beats the shit out of crazy psycho villains. And that it's another thing where it's like, that's an interesting facet to that character that we don't get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, this movie basically, it punches 50-50 on a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Because that's something I wish I would have seen that more.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's what I was annoyed by. Because I was like, your dad was fucking, like, he, like, built a public transportation system that was cheap. And, like, he was, like, doing all this stuff to, like, improve the city. And you're just like, no, I'm going to put on a suit and punch people.
Yeah. And those are, like, Bruce Wayne absolutely carries that legacy on, like, when he returns. Like, because he does what he can in both roles. One of the things that
Before we move on from that, one of the things in the comics that he does is he, like, oftentimes, so he talks about how he starts to, like, feel bad for some of these criminals and understand that it's not black and white. So in the comics, a lot of times he'll bust these people that he can tell were not supposed to be there or whatever, and they'll do their time, and then Wayne Enterprises immediately hires them.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps them basically in the database and then gets them a legit job.
Basically
when they
gives
get
them
out.
A shot at a future.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that happens a bunch. That's like, in fact, it's used too much in the comics.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's ridiculous. But, like, I think that nobody's interested in that. Everyone wants to see a city that is on the brink of exploding
into
a million
and
pieces.
Batman punching
every superhero movie. It's every superhero movie has to be an apocalypse, if not for the hero.
Yep. And one of the things that they knock out of the park with Rachel is right at the end when she has that line about how Batman's not the mask, Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And that is completely, like, that's 100% accurate.
That was the one, I mean, I agree with that line of that scene, but that was the one
scene
where I was like, it was a bad scene. And then also, that was the thing that annoyed me the most about Rachel, as far, because her as a character was great, her as a love interest, I agree, was dumb. Or I don't know if it, I mean,
that's pretty much what I'm saying, yeah.
Because Batman, before he left, Bruce Wayne, before he left, was a fucking twat. I don't know if I'm allergic or something.
That was the one word I could read off of her notes, was twat.
Was twat.
He was so awful. I mean, and this is without, I mean, they didn't give their love connection any backstory at all. It was just like, this is a little girl that you were chasing around.
Yeah.
And, like, here's her once in 20s.
You had to infer a lot with little information really given.
Right, but like,
oh, they were in that first scene and he stole an arrowhead from her.
Yeah, like, their only love connection was that she was the only female, except for his mother and his wife,
apparently. Yeah.
But, I mean,
that's Christopher,
like,
Nolan film, I think we'd describe that.
Like, she was, like, complaining, and she, like, the last time she saw him before he left, she was, like, she slapped him and was, like, your father would be ashamed of you, like, you have, you know, she was, like, angry that he didn't have, like, the same value system and was, like, throwing his potential away, and she was, like, you're a twat. And then he goes away, and he comes back, and she finds out that he's, like, you know, he's Batman. He's, like, he just saved the city. Like, he obviously cares about Gotham. And she's just like, oh, I wish you were the little twat that you were 7 years
ago. Yeah, I wish you were the, like, piece of shit that, had it not been for a criminal's intervention, might have become a criminal yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish I missed that piece of shit that I used to love.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck you, Rachel.
Yeah. They don't nail Bruce Wayne too well.
No.
And like I said, you know, I mean, Bruce is a both a black and white character and a character with a lot of gray area, and, like, that's what's so cool about Batman, what you said initially, you know, not having superpowers, but also trying to believe in these ideals, and yet they just basically have Bruce go through a character arc of was shit, now is good, and it's just a very boring, you know, the prodigal son returns character arc that we've seen so often.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an hour into the movie before we see Batman.
Yeah.
And that's the longest any of the movie ever.
Oh, no, Dark Knight Rises is just about that long.
I'm saying up until the point where this came out.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah,
Dark Knight 89, Rises. He's immediately.
Yeah, 89, yeah. Batman Returns, like, it's maybe 15 minutes, and then, like, Batman Forever and Batman Rock, like, literally open with, like, either in the, they both open with him in the Batcave suiting up.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to fight a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know that's necessarily the way it has to start off, but, yeah, it's definitely if it's an hour before you actually see the title character, it's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not good.
So, and it would be good if they developed Bruce Wayne really well.
Yeah.
Like, if I felt like I had a solid concept of, like, who Bruce Wayne is in the comics, like,
yeah.
if I had a really solid comic or concept of Bruce Wayne as a character, I'd be like, oh, it's fine that you took an hour to get to his other half.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's a two-hour movie, you know, like, half Batman, half Bruce Wayne.
Oh, it's two hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
These movies are also long.
So, but it didn't happen at all. It was, like, I felt I had a better concept of who Batman was as a character, even though it took an hour to get to him.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I don't know what all the, you know.
Yeah. I just want to remind everyone listening, I actually like all three of these movies, but they've got their flaws.
They do. And I think it's frustrating how close they come.
Yes,
and it's
they
like,
come so close.
It's so hard to, like, put that into words, especially as, like, a fanboy. It feels super nerdy. Like, the only way to describe it is, like, like you said, like one line of Scarecrow's dialogue, and like that can carry a whole movie. Like that can be enough to justify like the last 45 minutes I've watched. And so, like, compared to how abysmal most of these superhero movies had been up until this point,
yeah, definitely.
Like even just those moments where it's like, oh, we're being taken seriously, like for our love. Like that's what every nerd wants,
yeah.
is for everyone to say like, yeah, that actually is cool.
Yeah,
that's and Batman Begins. I remember sitting in a theater at midnight. Totally feeling it.
Yeah,
like,
same.
It was electric, you know, for the when the moments did come where they got it right. And when Bruce has the taser, that's really the only money shot you get at Batman, which is another complaint that, like, they're cutting back and forth so often.
Yeah.
But, like, that moment I remember, I actually, they showed it as a preview during the season finale of Smallville, and I remember seeing it and being like, what, they're going to make this movie?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, there's a lot to love about this
movie. Yeah, definitely. And one of the things, like, it's also, I sympathize with the people who are involved in writing and making these movies, too, because, like, we can sit here and, like, we can Monday morning quarterback it all we want, but, like, at the same time, like, at the end of the day, their job is to make a marketable film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means doing shit, like, dumbing things down or adding an unnecessary love interest. Like, with Hellboy, that's one of the only things I hate about Hellboy. Is that they shoehorn a love interest in with Hellboy and Selma Blair's character, which is in the comic books, but, like, it's so ham-fisted the way they go about it. It just feels really unnatural. It's the only thing I don't like about the movie.
Yeah.
But, like, there's all those things where, like, oh, we have to have a love story. We have to have a damsel in distress. And now, like, every violent show in the movie is like, oh, we have to have a woman threatened by rape every 30 minutes. Like, no! No, you never had to have that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, like, Game of Thrones has been really bad about it this season. It's just like, what if we, how many RPMs are you doing? Like, what? Rapes per minute, how many you got? Like, I mean, we wrote 8 into this episode. Like, it really hides it. It's like, no, that's just lazy fucking writing.
Mm.
It's like,
easy way to heighten the emotional state.
Exactly, and it's frustrating. So, like, I don't understand that in writing, but I understand why Batman Begins, why some of those things get shoehorned in there. Especially because Nolan at this point had done Memento and Insomnia,
yeah.
which I love. I think both are really great movies, but I don't know that either were like, I don't know how profitable, I don't know how much of a success Insomnia was. Like, I know critically everyone has a boner for Memento,
yeah.
but like I have no clue off the top of my head what kind of box office it. Oh, and he did follow his first one, but like that was small potatoes because it was like independent, like nobody was really in it. So, like, and a lot of movies are doing that now where they're taking a gamble on, like, filmmakers who have had kind of more subtle, nuanced projects. Like, him with this, and then, like, giving Guardians of the Galaxy to James Gunn, who has done Slither, a Bigfoot movie, and Super with Rainn Wilson. And then, like, giving Jon Favreau Iron Man.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kind of interesting to see studios say, it's like, these guys are fucking nerds. Let's give them the reins and
yeah.
see what happens.
Yeah.
And I think that it's also, it's really easy, I think one of the reasons it probably sounds like we're, like, shitting on the movie a lot is because it's just, it's easier to point out, like, things that you think are funny or, like, things that you don't, like, when you're, like, watching a movie, planning to talk about it at the end, like, it's easier to, like,
yeah, absolutely.
Say, but I know, I do think it was a good movie.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely is.
And one thing that I like a lot about Nolan, and, like, Memento is, like, one of my favorite movies,
yeah.
probably. He's really good, and when I started taking notes because I was planning on what I like, I'm the person that writes down every plot hole and, like, points out. And there's, like, there are very few in Nolan's movies, there are very few, like, gaping plot holes.
We haven't got to Dark Knight Rises yet.
Okay. In this movie, there was very few, I can't even think of anything that was, like, a gaping...
Well, he's good
unexplainable.
I would say he's good at fooling you into thinking that there are no plot holes. I think that there are. I mean, I think there's plenty of implausibility. Batman thrives on his plausibility, and even in like his action sequences where there's just a helicopter flying three stories above the ground.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, there's like the absurdities there.
Yeah.
I
would say there's implausible, but I would say like in this universe, like there's nothing that like. Like,
how does Bruce Wayne take everything out of Wayne Enterprises and nobody's the wiser?
That's,
how did he remove the tumbler? How did he get that home?
Yeah.
Like, if you like,
it's a tank.
And like, the police are—they're like, you know, they consider Batman like a criminal in this movie.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Until the end, you know. But like, they're like a manhunt, and they're like, okay, like he has A, B, C, D, E, F weapons that like nobody like. Who the fuck do they think could have it in Gotham City?
Hey, what corporations are developed? Oh, Wayne Enterprises has a military applications division now.
What billionaire came back into town recently?
Yeah, it definitely...
Well, and then it takes one guy looking over the books for a second in Dark Knight to be like, oh yeah, Bruce Wayne's Batman, duh.
Yeah, they...
I don't know. I think they justify their plot holes. They move past them and they're like, we're not gonna fucking explain it.
Yeah.
Keep up.
Yeah.
But like, I certainly don't think they're free.
You're right. I admit that statement. I don't think it's free. There's the plot holes are very like Superman movie plot holes. Like they're like things that you accept when you're watching a superhero movie.
Yeah, you suspend your disbelief.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, this dude can fly and shoot lasers. I'll pump the brakes on whether or not I think Amy Adams is wearing a wig or whatever.
Right, exactly. Okay, yep. But I don't think there's any, like, the plot is solid through the whole movie, and, like, at some points, it's, you know, it's, like, obvious what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, and in a good way sometimes. And then there are some things that I thought were, like, pretty subtly hinted at. Like, you could, like, connect the dots after you find out. But, like, you know, there are a few things that were pretty subtle, and like I don't know. I thought like plot wise, it was a good movie.
Yeah, definitely. There's two scenes I want to talk about really quick before we wrap it up. The first is Taylor mentioned is probably his favorite scene in the movie, where Batman like snares Flash up to the rooftop and is just interrogating him upside down.
Mm. So good.
Like that,
Erica laughed through it and my heart broke.
Yeah.
So insane.
Well, it's the first time you really get a taste of that Batman voice. Because, like, before, all you hear is, all he says is, here, in response to a criminal screaming, where are you? Which actually is also one of my favorite moments. Where, like, he just drops down his air. And then, of course, when he pulls Falcone out of the car and says, I'm Batman, in response to, what the hell are you?
Yeah.
And then Headbutt was like, oh, so worth it. Like, as much as it sucked having to wait an hour to see Batman, that scene was so worth the wait, because it's so good. But yeah, the scene where he's interrogating Flash is so good. It's so, like, it's everything that Batman
so
is.
So here's
I hated that scene.
Okay, we'll do you argue against it, and I defend it. So I'll defend it first.
Okay.
I think that so often, you know, this movie's so about fear, and in the past, we've gotten Batman zipping around and whoop-de-doo, and even
being
in
whimsical, even.
Being whimsical in the
brooding,
in the Schumacher
whimsical.
Films, and
then
despite his brooding, still hooking himself up to a grapple thing and just sort of flying around while he flips his cape in the Burton films.
Yeah.
So like, this was legitimately, I put myself in Flash's shoes, and I'm like, what if this happened?
Yeah.
What if you zip up
terrifying.
To the top of a fucking skyscraper, and here's this thing, and it's a guy in a mask, but that's the thing about Batman is when you see him, the reason he wears this whole getup is when you see him quick, you don't see a guy in the mask.
Yeah.
He had
you
seen
see
Batman
him.
Before, right? Didn't he? Because he was there.
He saw movement. He saw a blur.
Yeah.
Like,
and just
he was like,
something
is beating the shit out of 10 armed thugs.
Yeah.
I'm getting the fuck out of
here. Yeah, he gets away.
Well, and on top of that, you're upside down. Like, you got pulled up super fast. You're disoriented, too. So, like, you have no, like, you're not grounded in anything.
You're
like,
dizzy. It's just the scream.
And then you
in
get
your
dropped
face.
Again and pulled right back up. Yeah. It's, so go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead and make your comment.
So, my problem with that scene was, I mean, it was the first time you heard his voice, really. But it wasn't, that wasn't his normal, like, he was, like, so angry.
I think he alternates the voice, like, three different times through the movie, which I had never really caught before.
I think that's good. I think it makes it less grating. Like, when it's the same tone, it sounds like Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
The big problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for me, in that scene, it came off as Batman / Bruce Wayne just being, like, so mad at this guy.
Yeah.
Which, like, I mean, he was, like, interrogating
him,
trying to be intimidating.
You
want to
put that
but it seemed like, it came up to me as just, like, this, like, crazed, like, he was just, like, screaming in his face.
Yeah.
And this, like, weird, like.
Well, then the rain dripping down, too.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Like, although I do like, he kept consistent with that tone, because he uses that same tone when he's interrogating Scarecrow later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like, whatever the hell he yells
at. It was so
him.
Much less ridiculous in that scene, though, I think.
I mean,
well, he's also turning into a big bat monster, which they stole from the animated series shamelessly.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's literally for another time.
Oh, before I say the other scene, I just remembered there's a really cool parallel that I never caught before. The last thing that Thomas Wayne says to Bruce before he dies is, don't be afraid.
I caught it this time.
The next to last thing Ra's al Ghul says to Batman is,
Don't be afraid, Bruce.
Well,
they both say don't be afraid, Bruce. They both it's the same
line. And then he says whatever it is, like, you won't kill me or whatever. Like, that's the last thing he says.
You lose it in the didn't you get the memo shuffle of all the lines
coming
back
again. Like, that's such a great symmetry to that. Like, and that's one of those things that, like, like I said, this is probably the 10th or 11th time I've watched this movie now, and I've never caught it before tonight. So I think it's really cool. There's some, and I think there are. Like, I think there are degrees to Nolan films. Like, and even this, like, despite its flaws, there are layers to it. And there's things, like, it's like a Coen Brothers film where you can come back and you can glean new things with each viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool. The other scene I wanted to talk about before we wrap up is the moment that I knew I was on board with this movie when I saw it in the theaters. And it's the scene where they're in line for breakfast in the prison in the very beginning. The dude walks up and says, "You're in hell, little man, and I am the devil." Bruce Wayne looks at him and says, "You're not the devil, you're practice." And then beats the shit out of, like, seven guys. And I was like, they nailed it. Like, this is Batman. Like, and I was just sitting there, like, I was with my friends, and they're just looking around, they're like, "What the fuck are you smiling about?" I was like, "Guys, they got it. They did it." Like, I was so happy, and I was so on board from that moment. Like, and that's, like, a two-minute scene, if that. And, like, he's not even in his costume, it's just bearded Bruce Wayne fighting a bunch of dudes. And then they're dragging him off. It's like, "I don't need protection. Not for you, it's for them." It's like, they get it. Like, they get it. They understand the essence of what Batman is.
I was so into bearded Bruce Wayne.
Oh, fuck
so
yeah.
So, I was all about it.
It gets gross for Dark Knight Rises, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does.
But
with
groomed,
the Howard Hughes?
Yeah. But, like, groomed Bruce Wayne. And just, like, groomed Christian Bale in general.
He's such an attractive man. Well, okay. I think you meant... because shaven, he's just American Psycho to me.
Yeah.
All the time.
I feel like we have to talk about that. Like, sorry, this will be the last thing we talk about since we're running a little long. I know I mentioned this during... I really like to pretend in all the Bruce Wayne scenes that he's just Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. Because, like, it makes sense. They're both rich guys. They're both well-dressed. They're, in their own ways, kind of sociopaths.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Nolan's Batman is a gigantic sociopath.
Oh, yeah.
As Erica, like, pointed out.
Well, and especially, like, when he's leaving, like, when he writes the check, he's like, "I'm buying this hotel." I was like, he's going to tell that dude about a Huey Lewis in the News album and then fucking butcher him.
Yeah.
The valet. I love that. Like, I have to look for it. Like, I find it hard to believe that some kind of American Psycho Batman mashup doesn't exist.
Oh, absolutely.
And if it doesn't, it needs to.
Yeah.
That'll be our project.
Yes. Cool. I think we're going to wrap it up there, unless you guys have anything else you wanted to hit.
No. That's good. I got plenty for the next films.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. So that's part one of us tackling Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. Thank you, Taylor, for guest hosting this with me.
Woo.
Thank you, Erica, for being our guest for this journey. And everybody listening, we will catch you next time.
Join me for the next episode as Taylor Reinhardt and Erica Van Hite continue our journey through Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy with the second installment, The Dark Knight. Make sure to like the page on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, send any questions or comments, suggestions for the show you have to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next time.